Please be seated. The African American spiritual Ain't Got Time to Die was written by Hall Johnson, and it has these joyfully dramatic words. Been so busy praising my Jesus, been so busy working for the kingdom, been so busy serving my master, ain't got time to die. If I don't praise him, if I don't serve him, the rock's gonna cry out, glory and honor, glory and honor. Ain't got time to die. In this inspiring and wonderful spiritual, Johnson is underscoring and celebrating the joy and excitement of being a Christian. The joy and excitement of serving Jesus in gratitude for what Jesus has done for us. The point that this spiritual is driving home with great enthusiasm is that when we truly become Christians, when we really commit our lives to Christ, then we just can't sit still any longer. We become so excited, so thrilled, so grateful that we can't help but love him, praise him, serve him, and share him with others. That is what Andrew is doing this morning. This passion and knowledge that Andrew experiences reminds me of the passion of a great American, one whom we will honor tomorrow. Most of us have heard, and many even know, many of the words of Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech. It is etched in many of our psyches, and the progress that is attributed to it is well known. As with all great things, there is usually something significant that has happened before that allowed the great thing to happen. That is the case here. On Good Friday, 1963, 53 blacks, led by Martin Luther King, marched into Birmingham to protest the existing segregation laws, and all were arrested. This caused the white clergyman of this southern town to compose a letter appealing to the black population to stop their demonstrations. Their letter appeared in the Birmingham newspaper. In response, King drafted a document that would mark the turning point of the civil rights movement and provide enduring inspiration to the struggle for racial equality. King's letter from Birmingham jail strives to justify the desperate need for nonviolent direct action, the absolute immorality of unjust laws, and his utter disappointment with the church, who, in his opinion, had not lived up to their responsibilities as people of God. I want to share a small section of this letter that, quite frankly, I find more powerful, at least for the church, than anything King ever said, wrote, or did. And I would urge you to go home, find it on the internet, print it out, and then read, mark, and inwardly digest it. You will not be disappointed. King writes, "I must honestly reiterate that I have been disappointed with the church. I do not say this as one of those negative critics who can always find something wrong with the church. I say this as a minister of the gospel who loves the church, who was nurtured in its bosom, who has been sustained by its spiritual blessings, and who will remain true to it as long as the cord of life shall lengthen. In spite of my shattered dreams, I came to Birmingham with the hope that the white religious leadership of this community would see the justice of our cause and with deep moral concern would serve as the channel through which our just grievances could get to the power structure. I have watched many churches commit themselves to a completely otherworldly religion which made a strange distinction between bodies and souls, between the sacred and the secular. Too many others have been more cautious than courageous and have remained silent behind the anesthetizing security of stained glass windows. I had hoped that each of you would understand, but again, I have been disappointed. There was a time when the church was very powerful, in the time when the early Christians rejoiced at being deemed worthy to suffer for what they believed. In those days, the church was not merely a thermometer that recorded the ideas and principles of popular opinion. It was a thermostat that transformed the mores of society. Whenever the early Christians entered a town, the people in power became disturbed and immediately sought to convict the Christians for being disturbers of the peace or outside agitators. But the Christians pressed on in the conviction that they were a colony of heaven, called to obey God rather than man. Small in number, they were big in commitment. They were too God-intoxicated to be astronomically intimidated. By their effort and example, they brought an end to such ancient evils as infanticide and gladiatorial contests. Things are different now. So often, the contemporary church is a weak, ineffectual voice with an uncertain sound. So often, it is an arch defender of the status quo. Far from being disturbed by the presence of the church, the power structure of the average community is consoled by the church's silent and often even vocal sanctions of things as they are. But the judgment of God is upon the church as never before. If the church of today does not recapture the sacrificial spirit of the early church, it will lose its authentic ring, forfeit the loyalty of millions, and be dismissed as an irrelevant social club with no meaning for the 20th century. I meet young people every day whose disappointment with the church has risen to outright disgust. Never before have I written so long a letter. I'm afraid it is much too long to take your precious time. I can assure you that it would have been much shorter if I had been writing from a comfortable desk. But what else can one do when he is alone in a narrow jail cell other than write long letters, think strange thoughts, and pray long prayers? And he signed it, "Yours for the cause of peace and brotherhood." Powerful words, no doubt. Words that reflect often what's still going on in our world. And as we return to our gospel, think about Andrew. You know, in this passage today, it's the only time we hear about Andrew. But he's a very important character. What makes Andrew so important is that Andrew brings Peter to Jesus. Without Andrew, we don't have Peter. We don't have the rock. And going back in history, without Bonhoeffer, we don't have an understanding of the cost of discipleship. And without King, we don't have I Have a Dream or a call to the church to move out of its inauthenticity. Here is the truth. If no Christian testifies to Jesus, the church evaporates. The gospel will still exist, but only in the abstract. The gospel becomes the proverbial falling tree in the woods with no one to hear it fall. So how are you? How am I? How are we testifying to Jesus? How are we, like Andrew, referring Jesus to others? You don't have to have some flash of light epiphany, but you should have something, some sense of how Christ is growing in you, or more commonly, how Christ is introducing various crises to how we think and live. These crises help us separate the wheat from the chaff of what matters to God. So start small and simply. If you are not articulate in testifying to Jesus, start small. If you have children, start with them. Teach them that your family is loving and courageous because Jesus invites us into that kind of life. Find a trusted friend and say, "You know, I think I actually believe this whole Jesus thing." Once you begin saying it, once you begin referring Jesus, it gets easier. And you become braver. Without testimony, the gospel dries up. And when that happens, other ways of life creep in. Ways of life that are manifestly not God's.